It was a holiday weekend for millions of Americans, but on the other side of the world, Pope Francis was on a mission. He visited the Middle East to add his voice and presence to efforts to achieve peace and reconciliation. We wanted to know more about this visit, so we called a person whose voice will be familiar to you, Sylvia Poggioli, NPR Senior European Correspondent. Sylvia, welcome back. Thanks so much for joining us once again.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, this isn't the first time that a pope has visited the Holy Land, of course, but there were a number of dimensions to this trip that many people saw as historic, right?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, the fact is that his entourage, I think it's the first time that we've had a pope who brought with him two good friends from his native Argentina, a rabbi, Rabbi Abraham Skorka, with whom Pope Francis has written a book, and a Muslim leader, Omar Aboud, with whom he has been dealing a great deal on interreligious affairs. So I think this already immediately set a stage for something completely new. He's coming, in a way, with a clean slate.
And it's also the first time that a pope has landed in the West Bank, right, rather than Tel Aviv. He also visited a Palestinian refugee camp, and he traveled from Amman directly to the West Bank city of Bethlehem. What was the purpose of these particular gestures?
Well, there were certainly several important nods to the Palestinians. As you said, he was the first who flew directly from Amman to the West Bank, to Bethlehem, rather than going through Israel. And the Vatican officially referred to the visit as to the state of Palestine, which also Francis repeated that phrase. Now, the Vatican has long been in favor of a two-state solution, but this was an extra boost in support of the Palestinian bid for full statehood. And he also did something else. He did an unscripted stop at the Israeli barrier wall, which Palestinians see as a symbol of Israeli oppression. He stopped there. He rested his forehead against the concrete wall and prayed. And that was certainly very moving for the Palestinians.
And he also met with refugees from the Syrian war.
Absolutely. That was in Jordan. That was an important visit because many also of these refugees are Christians and they are people fleeing the civil war. This was a double event because it was important for Pope Francis to make an appeal for religious freedom in the region, that because, you know, the number of Christians are really dwindling. In the last 20 years, they've gone something like from 20% of the population of the Middle East to maybe 4%. So that was important. He also made an appeal. He thanked Jordan very much for helping refugees. And he made an appeal to the world to not abandon Jordan, which is handling something like an official number of 600,000 Syrian refugees, which would be 10% of the Jordanian population, but some people say they may be many more, 1.3 million. So the refugees were one of the key aspects of his first day on this trip of the Middle East.
He has issued an invitation to involve himself in the Middle East peace talks. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
He invited the Israeli and Palestinian presidents, Shimon Peres and Mahmoud Abbas, to join him in prayer at the Vatican for an end to their conflict, to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It seems it will take place next week. On the plane, he was asked about this. He said, it's not a mediation effort, just a joint prayer. And he said it would have been best for it to happen in the region, but it would have been impossible to find the right place. So he said, I decided to invite them to my home in the Vatican. Now, it seems very unlikely that President Peres, the Israeli president, will receive a mandate from Prime Minister Netanyahu to negotiate with Abbas on renewing direct talks, which collapsed just about a month ago. So it's going to be more, you know, a very symbolic event, a great photo op, of course, but it's also at the end of Shimon Peres's mandate. So it's not likely that it's going to lead to a resumption of talks.
How so? And if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Sylvia Poggioli. She's NPR's senior European correspondent. She really needs no introduction, but that's who she is if you just tuned in. What is the symbolic importance of this?
Well, I think to go back to the fact that this is the first non-European pope, I think he brings a very interesting and new element in his encounter with Jews and Muslims. Contrary to John Paul II, Polish-born, he carried the weight, the legacy of his country's, even he was certainly not an anti-Semite, but Poland had a very heavy legacy. It would be impossible for Jews to meet Pope John Paul II and not speak about that problem. Same goes with Pope Benedict, Joseph Ratzinger, the German. He also carried the weight of his country's past. This does not happen with Francis. he comes from Argentina. Neither he really appears with a clean slate. Nobody can blame him for the Holocaust or on the Muslim side for the Crusades. In fact, last year, in his very first foray into international diplomacy, in a sense, it was Pope Francis who, you know, intervened when it looked like the Western powers wanted to intervene in Syria. He called a day of prayer and meditation on Syria. The fact that here a Catholic leader intervened against the Western powers bombing a Muslim state, you know, gained him a lot of credibility in the Islamic world.
Hmm. It's interesting that just in reading kind of the American media, it had an element of surprise. I mean, obviously, a visit like this is a visit of a head of state. It's planned. People know where he's going to go and what he's going to do. But there was still an element of surprise, I think, that he spoke so strongly and so directly about some of these issues. I mean, what do you think the upshot is going to be?
Well, I think we have to now remember that there's a certain narrative around Pope Francis, which is, you know, he's very popular. He's very, very well liked. Even when you have some doubts about some things that maybe he hasn't changed doctrine as much as some liberal Catholics would like, you know, he comes with a tremendous amount of popularity. So I think there's a lot of benevolence. And you're right. It was a very short trip and no huge surprises other than this stopping at the wall. And he also went off script at one point when he met the refugees, denouncing arms dealers, calling the arms trade the root of evil and hatred and love of money. And he said, let's pray for these criminals who are selling weapons, fueling hatred, that they will convert. So nothing terribly surprising, but he just instills a lot of sympathy.
Hmm. Finally, you know, on the way back, he spoke out against another a significant issue in the life of the church. He talked about the sexual abuse of children, and he announced that he will be meeting with some of the victims or past victims of sexual abuse by clergy. Could you talk a little bit about that?
He said he was going to meet sometime next month in June with a group of victims, sex abuse victims, several of them were Europeans, and he would meet them in where he stays in the Vatican, in his residence, and he would hold a mass with them. He also said that three bishops are currently under investigation. He did not say which ones, but he said there would be absolutely zero tolerance. He forcefully denounced clerical sex abuse of minors, and he compared it to a satanic black mass. Pretty powerful language.
How is that move being perceived? I take it there have been calls for him to meet with victims before now. Is this being seen as a bold step or a timid one?
Well, I think several of victims groups, the most the best organized, are certainly in the United States. They have said this is just another gesture. We still have to see, you know, something much more concrete. Pope Francis appointed recently a commission to tackle the issue of clerical sex abuse in the church. The head of it is Cardinal Sean O'Malley of Boston. And four of the eight members are women. One of them is herself a survivor of sex abuse. But until something really happens, until people really see that there is a definitive policy of handing over to law enforcement any cases of suspected abuse, I think a lot of people are still holding their breath.
That was NPR senior European correspondent Silvia Poggioli. We reached her in Rome. Silvia, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.